Okay, good morning. I hope you can hear me and you had a good weekend. So the plan for the rest of the term is to start working on the inverse to what we started with at the beginning of the term. So we started out the term with derivatives. And we defined it as a limit of difference quotients. Or a slope geometrically. And the kind of surprising thing about the calculus that Newton observed and that you learned in Math 21, of course, is that to work on the inverse to the derivative, to go the other direction, one does the integral and the geometry turns out to be area. Okay, and so that's what we're gonna focus on for a while now. So next is the inverse, which is the integral. Okay, and again, it is a little surprising, but it's something one gets used to, which is that the right geometry is the area. And so we're gonna spend a lot of time focusing on that for now. So, which is defined via area. Okay, and of course, the picture that you have in mind would be something like x. So if we have the function f of x equals x, and then we compute the area here up to some point, let's see, this is on the interval 0 to 1. And if we look at the area, let me call that up to x. All right, so then we have this area is, well, the height, the width is x and the height is x, so it's x squared over 2. Right, and that's the antiderivative of this function. So this is the graph of f of y is equal to y, or f of x equals x. And if we take the derivative of this area, then we get the original function. All right, so that's the picture, of course, as you saw in Math 21. And just like with derivatives, what we did in Math 21 was understand integrals for a wide class of functions. Actually, they're pretty hard. They're algorithmically actually quite difficult. And what we did with derivatives in this class was to extend their application. And here also we want to explore in detail just how rich a class of functions we can compute integrals for. Okay, so. So we're going to explore next which functions we can integrate. And this is a little bit you have to think a little bit about what that means. I don't mean for which can we find a formula, so not necessarily a formula. Like you were in Math 21. So in that class, one explored really what functions you could find nice formulas for the integrals. Here we just want to know, is there an integral at all? Okay, does it make sense even to talk about the integral? So that's the class of questions that we're going to be asking. Okay, all right, so let me just get started then with the definition. And let me note that if you end up using a lot of soup and int. And for the basic property of those, that's in section 11.1, if you want to go back and look that over. So look at section 11.1 for basic properties of the soup and inf. get to the things we will make use of. All right, and so so now we're going to take a bit of a digression to actually work out areas. So, and it requires a bunch of notation. So notation for areas for Riemann integrals. Which are really areas. Okay. All right, so let's see. So the first thing that we will need is the concept of a partition. And the notation in the text is a little bit confusing there, but in any case, I will use a special case of their notation. So now we're in a section 11.2. Partitions. So definition. If we have an interval AB, then a partition is just a finite subset of that interval, including A and B. So P is a subset of this interval, which is finite. And contains A and B. Then we call it a partition. Of the interval AB. All right, and once you have that partition, then there's a bunch of things that you can label associated with it, and we will do that. And so one is, of course, the elements themselves. And since it's just a finite list, I'm just going to order them. So I'll write P is equal to, so it's got to include A, so that's the smallest element. And let me call that X0, the smallest. And then the next one is going to be bigger. And so I'm just going to sort them. Okay, and it's finite. So the last one is say the nth, and that one is just going to be B, right? So this is what a partition is, and I just have named its points. And then with intervals, associated intervals, so those also turn out to be useful. Let me just call those I. And I sub k is just going to be the interval that goes from x k minus 1 to x k. Okay, so it's just going to be the interval that that this partition cuts my large interval into, small intervals. All right, let's see, I also want to add here. And also the lengths of those intervals come out to be handy, so I'll list those with lengths. Let me say L sub k, which will just be the difference between their two endpoints. So x sub k minus x sub k minus one. Okay, so those are some more bits of notation. And then finally, let me just add two more things and then do a couple of examples. So write capital pi for partitions of A, B for all partitions. For the set of all partitions, of the interval AB. So in particular, we would write that P up above is an element of pi AB. Okay, that's just a set of all of them. And then finally, we sometimes want to compare two partitions and call Q a refinement of P if it's bigger. So if P is contained in Q and both are partitions of AB. Okay, that's a bunch of notation. Let me just do a couple of examples so that you can make sense of that notation. So examples. All right, so let's consider partitions of the interval, let's say, 0, 3. All right, and so I'll have, say, P. Okay, so to be a partition of 0, 3, it's got to start with a 0, right? And it's got to end with 3, and I'll just toss in a couple other points, so that maybe it's got a 1/2 and 2. Okay, so that's a perfectly good example of a partition, and if in my notation, this would be x0, this would be x1, this would be x2, and this top one would be x3, right? So that's fitting with my notation. All right, and then it'll have intervals. So I'll have I1 will be the interval from 0 to 1/2. I2 will be the interval from 1/2 up to 2. And then I3 will be the last one from 2 to 3. And so that's the notation. And the picture, of course, is that I have my interval from 0 up to 3, and I've cut it up into pieces. So here's a 1/2, and here's 2. And so those are the sub intervals that I've broken it up into. Okay, so that's the picture. All right, and let's see, I guess just to give one more thing, if I have a refinement of this partition, so Q. So if I want it to be a refinement, of course, it has to include all the other ones and then maybe some more stuff. And let me just add one more thing. So let's say it's got 0, 1/2, 1, 2, and 3. So this contains P and is a refinement. Of P, and let's see if I switch colors here and label Q in red. So then Q has this one extra point. So it's got all these, all the previous points, and it's got one extra one. Okay, any questions about the notation? So that's the notation. Okay. All right. So the whole point of producing such notation is to compute areas under curves, right? So just like we did with the area under the curve X, we wanted to find a general way to define areas under curves. And so that's what this is set up for. So let me write out then the next bit of notation, which is notation for the areas. All right, so we already have these partitions. So let's continue with areas. So down here, definition. All right, so associated to this partition, now if I have a function here, let's say I'll do a green here for my function. If I had some function, this is my function at y equals f of x, then I want to use this partitions to produce some concept of an area under this curve, right? So I've got this partition here at say 1/2 and 2 and 0 and 3, and I want to find an area. And so the idea, of course, is that I'm going to just approximate it with some boxes. Okay. And use that black stuff for the area. So that's an approximation. It's not quite right. But as I make it finer, it's going to get better, right? So that's the idea. So let me just write that out now as a definition. So we have, of course, we can do it above or below, and we'd want to do both. So definition, if we have, all right, so for this to make sense, we're going to have to take our functions to be bounded. So let's do that. So f is bounded on my interval a, b. So that's the framework that we are in. Then, and we have a partition of AB. Okay, so we have a function that's bounded, and we have a partition. Then we can define two things, the upper and lower approximations. Okay, and so u will be for upper. So u of f associated to this partition p. All right, so that is going to be the picture that I've drawn over here. Right, so I want to get this area here. All right, and so what have I got? Well, I've got I guess I didn't write down the L's. Maybe I should write down the L's over here. So what is it clear? So what is L1, L2, and L3 here? So if we go back over to all our notations, not notation, right? So the L's are supposed to be the lengths of each of those intervals, right? And so those are going to be one half, three halves, and one. Right? So will be our three lengths. So this is one half, this is three halves, and this is one, right? So those are our three lengths for those intervals. Okay, so that notation is going to come up over here again. So the area under that is going to be the sum, okay, over all the intervals. So it's going to be where I runs from 1 up to n, right? So there are n plus 1 points, but they're n intervals, and that's what we want here. And so now we want the area of each of these little boxes, okay? And so it's going to be the width is going to be the L, and then the height is just going to be F. Right, but which f? And that's the trickiest bit. Well, I'm going to take whatever the biggest value is that it hits. Okay, and so that's the so that's what I have to write. So it's going to be L. So that I can do. So Li times the supremum. And this is why you might want to go back and look at properties of suprema and infima in section 11.1 over. Okay, well, where do I want it? I just want it to take place in the interval that I'm interested in. Okay, so inside of I of my function value, so f of a. Okay, so this is exactly what I have drawn in this picture in notation, okay? Question about that notation. All right, and then what we're gonna try to do is the opposite thing. So that's, we're trying to box in the possible areas between two things. Okay, so we're gonna have this black area and also this yellow area, all right? And so that's gonna be so the yellow one here is gonna be the L, FP, and the black one there is gonna be the U of FP. All right, and so what is going to be different when I write out my definition here, part B, of the lower estimate based on this partition P? Is it clear how those two will have to differ? Exactly, right? That's the only thing that's going to change. This soup is going to be switched to an inf, right? So in other words, where I evaluate my f is the only thing that changes, right? So I go from evaluating the supremum to evaluating it at the infimum, and then I'm done. Okay, so this is then just the sum, same sum, nothing different there, same width, nothing different there, same function, f. But now we're going to take the infimum and actually the same interval, I, but again, the only difference is that we're now looking at the infimum, okay? Okay, any questions about the notation? Okay, let me give you then 4 more definitions. It's a lot of definitions. And then I put you into a breakout room to do a few computations in these things just to get a feel for what they're like. Okay, so those are the approximations associated with a particular interval, but of course, we don't really care much about the intervals. The intervals are just a mechanism to get to what we want. And what we want is the area under the curve. And so we're going to optimize over those intervals. We're going to take the best interval possible. And so definition u of f, so without since I'm writing a new definition, let me put in my quantifiers again. So the information is the same as before. We have f, a bounded function, just like before. So if f is bounded, just as we had previously, then we write, but now we don't need a partition, right? Because we're skipping the partition. So we just write u of f without reference to a partition is going to be, well, the finer we make it, so this is a little bit confusing, the finer we make this partition here, so if I go to this red one, is the upper partition going to get better? Yes. Okay, so is it going to get smaller or bigger? So when I add this red one in, right, so now I have this box, right, in red, and then I have this box in red, right? So that replaces what used to be the black one. So is that refined one going to be a smaller upper estimate or a bigger one? Exactly, right? So did everyone see that? So I'm replacing what used to be this slightly bigger one, and I'm cutting out that corner that I didn't need, right? So I'm getting a smaller estimate. And so so this is going to be then the smallest that we can get. So this will be the infimum over partitions of AB of the upper estimate that I get when I employ P. Okay, and the finer it gets, the smaller that's going to get. And so it hopefully is converging on a good area. And in fact, we're optimistically going to call this an integral, but since it's not quite right, we're going to put a bar over the top. So for upper, all right? So this will be the integral from x equals a to b of f of x dx. All right. Okay, but just like before, since we're not sure that's going to work, we're also going to take the lower one, okay? And that's going to be just like before, only now we're going to take the supremum over all these partitions of the lower estimate. And we're going to call it the lower bar integral like so. Okay, and then finally, the best case is when those two agree, and then we'll just call that the integral, and we're going to call that space the new space of functions, the Riemann integrable functions. So definition, if we have a bounded function, so that's the only class that we're going to consider right now, and L and U are the same, then we're going to call that the integral without the upper and lower bars because they're the same, and call that thing Riemann integrable. F is called Riemann integrable, and often we'll drop Riemann because that's the only class we're going to consider in this course. Integrable. Okay, and write, so I'm going to say that f is in R int for Riemann integrable of AB. So it's a new function space to add to the ones with the D's and the C's that we already have. Okay, and oh, right, and finally, we were going to write it as an integral. And this u of f, which is the same as l of f, which is the same as integral upper, which is the same as integral lower of f, we're just going to write as the integral of f. And let me add all the markings to it. So x equals a to b of f of x. Okay, so that's the notation. Lots of notation. But that's the setup. So let me just give you an example to try in breakout rooms so that you can get a little practice. So for breakout rooms, and remind yourself of all this notation. Okay, so we'll just consider the interval a, b to be 0, 1. Okay, and the function will just be the function that I started with. So it's a very easy function. So f of x equals x, just the line of slope one, okay, just like we started with. So we know what the answer is supposed to be, and we just want to make it all fit with this notation, all right? So to do that, let me take a whole bunch of partitions. So I'm going to write p sub n will be the partition that just takes n equal intervals. So it's going to be 0, 1 over n, 2 over n, et cetera, to n minus 1 over n, and then finally 1. So it has to go from, it has to include 0 and 1, like all partitions do. All right, and then I want you to find various things about this. So let's just find everything that fits with all our notation. So so find the intervals. Oops, I didn't call it, I called it I. So I sub I and the lengths, L sub I, and those are easy, but then more just checking your that you're following the notation. Then what you want are the upper and lowers. So let's take U and L of F of P. And then I want you to drop the P's. So U of F. And then finally, F, for which N and M is PN a refinement of PM? So for which N and M is PN a refinement of PM? Okay, and actually let me add one more helpful fact. Okay, so a helpful fact. Let's see, does anyone know this? If I take the sum of the integers I, where I runs from 1 to n, so like if I equals 1 to 3, that would be 1 plus 2 plus 3. Does anyone know the formula for that?
It's like n times n plus 1 over 2?
Correct, very good. That's exactly right. Yep. N times n plus 1 over 2. So that's a handy, and I see a couple of people got it in the chat box. Very good. And that turns out to be handy for this computation. All right, so any questions about what I want you to try here? All right, so let me just give you a few minutes to see how much of that you can compute. Okay, let's see. So let's just start at the beginning. So let's see. Does everyone figure out how that fits with our notation? So let's see. So if we start with this first one, the interval that's labeled by I, so which one does that? What are the two endpoints of that one?
I minus 2 over I minus 1 to I minus 1 over 2. I minus 1 over 2, sorry.
It's over.
Wait a second.
So I think you're right. I minus 1. Is that?
That's not what I had, but now I think that's right.
Okay, all right. All right. Does everyone agree with that? So if we look at the first one, that's a good hint. It should be this, right? So that should be I1 here. Okay, very good. What about the length?
One over N?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so those are just kind of making sure that the notation set up correctly. Okay, now what about the L? That's most of the work here. So did everyone figure out, or anyone figure out what the U and the L are here associated to those partitions? I'm sorry, I left out the N's, didn't I? There should be N's there. Managed to get that computation. So if I just start writing it as a sum, right? So how many terms does it have? Right. This is what we're trying to copy over here. Right? Is our formula. Okay, so it's confusing. So is it n or n minus 1? So is that clear? So how many points are there here in this P? Say P3 is going to have 0 and a third and 2/3 and also 1, right? So it's going to have 4 points in it. So it's going to have these 3 intervals. Right. So the number of intervals is going to be the n, right, in this case. So that's going to be the sum is from, and you can also see that because these lengths have to add up to the whole interval, right? And so you're going to have to get them all in there. Okay, so we have n, and that's going to be the same as down here. Okay, and then let's see, and then we're supposed to stick in the length. We just computed the length, right? So we can stick that in. So that's 1 over n. And then the interesting part, right? So what are these soup and inf going to be? So let's start with the soup. So if I look at the ith interval here, and I'm just looking at this function x, right? So the simple, this relatively easy function, what's the maximum here, the soup that it achieves on interval I?
That'd be f of I over n.
Yes, exactly. Because it's an increasing function, so its maximum is going to be at the right-hand endpoint. Okay, so it's going to be just our function f evaluated at that highest point. So f of, and we see up here that's going to be I over n because that's the right-hand endpoint. And then what about the minimum? And other people have already plugged it in, right? Because the function is just the value itself, right? So we can also drop that f, as I see in the chat box there, right? And so I'll do that. But let me see down here. So this is going to be sum I equals 1 to n of 1 over n, I over n. Okay, does everyone get that? Okay. All right, and what's different here when I take L? That's right. Yeah. Instead of the top one here being where I want. I want to look at the bottom one, so I'm going to look at the left-hand endpoint instead of the right-hand endpoint. And that's going to give the my best, my minimum. So that's going to be f of I minus one over n. And since f is just the function x, this is just, we can just drop the f, and we get one over n I minus one over n. Okay, did everyone get that? Everyone's happy with that one. Okay, and let's see. So then this, the n's I can now pull out because they don't depend on I. So this is a one over n squared, sum I equals one to n of I, right? Which is what we just computed. And so now we can use this sum, right? That we just had down here, right? And then and we're done. So then this is n equal to one over n squared times n times n plus one over two, right? Which is one half plus one over two n. Okay, and what's different for the L? I mean, it looks, it's almost the same sum. I could, let me do it this way. I could re-index it. So this is one over n squared sum I equals zero to n minus one of I. I could write it that way if I like, if I could shift it. There are various ways to write it. That's one way. Okay, so this is gonna be, when you work it all out, one half minus one over two n. Okay, so one's a little bit less than the answer, one's a little bit more than the answer. And that's what we wanted to get, okay? Okay, so then u, of course, is that limit, so that's a half. And we also knew that because that's the area of that triangle. Okay, any questions about A through E? Okay, so that's basically just tracking through what all that notation means is what that is doing. Okay, finally, F. So to understand the notion of a refinement, what are my conditions on N and M to get a refinement? Right, so remember, a refinement is it's got more little pieces, right? It breaks it up into more pieces, so it's a better answer. And it has to include the original one, right? And see how those have to be related. For instance, if I take P, M to be 3, so P3, so that's the intervals 0, 1/3, 2/3, and 1. What would be an example of one that's a refinement of that?
P6.
Exactly. Right. So P4 has more pieces, but it's not a refinement, right? So it doesn't have the original one. Right, so the answer is as suggested by the one you just gave. We need n is a multiple of m. And then we'll have the original one inside. So refinement does not just mean it has more pieces. It means that it includes all the original ones, and then it and then it's added things to them. Okay. Okay. Any questions about all this notation? What's a notation? All right, then what I would like to do is write a few theorems. I think I'll prove the two that follow more easily from the one that's most of the notational work, although it's not that hard, actually, just a lot of notation. And then do some examples, because I think the examples really kind of clarify more about what's going on. And as I said, the goal in this class, unlike Math 21, where you tried to find formulas to get as many as you could, and you could get some, but really it's hard work to get to the integrals. Instead, what we're gonna do is try to figure out the whole class of functions where integrals even make sense. So it's kind of the opposite end of things. Okay, Let me just write some theorems. So this is a theorem 11.20. And again, our goal is to try to make sense of things. Actually, maybe before that, let me just note where we're headed. So just a little hint of where we're headed, Chris. So, so the ideas, I want to, this is supposed to be the inverse, right? We're supposed to be take a derivative and go back. So I want to compare, and they're not the same, but, and so I just want to compare this new space of functions that we've got, the Riemann integrable functions on AB to, so actually from that intuition, what would be the space of functions that we've already seen that I might want to try to compare that to? Which functions ought I to be able to integrate if integral is the inverse of the derivative?
Differentiable. Continuously differentiable.
Well, I should be able to integrate derivatives. Right? So I should be able to differentiate and then go back.
So the set of derivatives then? Because then you can go back into the set of...
then you go back to the differentiable ones. Right, right. You said. So the differentiable ones should be like the image of this map, and the derivatives are the ones that you start with. That's the picture. So we have this D1, remember, and we had derivatives that took us to D0. And so these are the ones that we'd like to be able to integrate so we can go back. Right, this is the picture that we'd like to get. So we want to compare it. They're not the same, but I want to compare it to this derivatives to the D0. Okay. And then we also want to compare the integral. So the integral from, let's say, 0 to x of f of y dy, f prime of y dy to our original function f of x. So this is a fundamental theorem of calculus. And we want to see how well that works. So for which functions is that going to work? And it'll work for most, but not all. And so you have to be a little bit careful, and that's what we're going to look at. Okay, and then we're also want to compare. We're also going to get something like a Banach space. So I want to compare the integrals, integrable functions, RAB, and the norm that I want to use for them is going to be an integral, because that's what we know how to do to them. Integral from A to B of the absolute value of my function. Yes. Okay, so that's the, and I want to compare this to a Banach space. It's not, but it's, in your next class, if you take another class on functional analysis, which will study these spaces, You keep improving this space until you do get a Banach space. Okay, so that's the next thing to do. We're not going to get quite that far, but that's what you should keep in your mind is how close we are to that. Okay, so those are things to think about. But now I'm going to say what we actually know. So some theorems. So first theorem 11.20. Okay, and so that we have all these partitions, we'd like to compare functions with partitions. So if we have a bounded function, on AB, and we have two partitions, one of which refines the other, so this is why we need a refinement. So P subset of Q are partitions. Then we can compare the upper and lower ones just as you would imagine. So just as we just ran through in intuitively, if I take the one that has more pieces to it, the refinement, and I look at the upper one, well, when I have more pieces, then I get closer to the answer. So it's smaller than what I had, this coarse one that I had when I just had a few pieces. Okay, so it's smaller or equal to U of F, P, the coarser one. I lost my drawing, but as we get the finer one, it gets smaller. That's effect. And then similarly, the lower one did the opposite. So the lower bound for Q gets better, and better now means bigger. So closer to our actual integral. All right, then theorem 11.21, which is fairly straightforward once I have 20. 20 is the most work just as far as notation, but it is intuitively, I hope, clear. If we have a bounded function and we have a couple of partitions, any two partitions now, so f is bounded. That's the only class we're going to study. And we have two partitions. And are any two partitions? So notice the big difference here. This one, we're assuming that one is a refinement to the other. And here, there's no such restriction, right? So these are just any pair. And these are related. Then we have that the lower estimate is sure enough smaller than or equal to the upper estimate. Okay, even if the two partitions are unrelated to each other. Okay, so, and then finally, as a result of that, and the thing that we care the most about, I guess the text just calls that a proposition. So this is also a proposition, and it's 11.22, which is really what we wanted. If I have a bounded function just like above, and now I'm finally going to get rid of my partitions. Again, our partitions are just a means to an end. So the end is that the upper and lower things are related. And what we get is that the lower one is lower. Okay, so L sub F is less than or equal to U sub F, U of F. Okay, so that's the. Okay, so I think, let's see, I'm running a long time. Maybe I'll just quickly prove the last two using the first one, because that makes it relatively easy, and then do some examples. So, so proof of 11.21 using 11.20. Okay, so I'm going to assume 11.20 and try to prove 11.21. So if we're in this setting here of having a bounded function and we have these two partitions, and I want to use 21, I want to get one partition which is a subset of another partition. So if I have any two partitions, how can I find another partition that contains both of them? See that?
Something that's a multiple of both of them?
It's actually a little bit easier. All I have to do is take the union, right? So I have this one and I have this one. I just take their union and now I've got all of them in there. Okay. So that's going to work. All right. So I'm going to take R equals P union Q. Okay. And so this will be a new partition. In my example where we had these P sub n's, it won't be another P sub n. It'll just be the one that has, if I have 5 and 7, it'll have all the something over 5 and all the something over 7. Okay. So it's just a. Got a bigger thing. Which is a refinement. Of both. P and Q. Okay. Okay, and so now we can just apply 11.21. Hence, L of FP is less than or equal to L of FR by 11.20, which is less than or equal to U of FR. And this is basically by definition, because in the one case we're taking the minimum, the other case we're taking the maximum, okay? And then this is also then less than or equal to U of FQ. And again, this is by 11.20. So 11.20 we can use together with this trick of just taking the union and that relates to their where the partitions are arbitrary. Okay. And then similarly, let me now give a proof of 11.22 using 11.21. Okay, so I still owe you 11.20, right? But I've got everything else here. All right, so if, actually, maybe I'll skip that because I don't have enough time to go through that proof. So next time, instead, let me do some examples because I think the examples are key. And so let me do a few examples here. All right, so let's just do a few of them. So let's compute the integral from 0 to 1 of, I'll just list a bunch and you can then figure out what they are. So x dx, this one we already did, right? So let me call that 1. And then let's do the integral from 0 to 1 of the function f of x dx if f of x is equal to 1 if x is less than or equal to 1/2, and 0 if x is bigger than 1/2. Okay, so the graph looks like this. Okay, and 3, I'm going to take the integral from 0 to 1 of g of x dx if g of x is equal to, again, just 0 or 1, but 1 if x is equal to 0, and 0 if x is bigger than 0. Okay, so it's just got one point where it's big. Okay, and then 4, integral from 0 to 1 of h of x dx and h of x, and again I'm just going to take zeros and ones, but this time it's going to be 1 if x is rational and 0 otherwise. Okay, so let's try to compute a few of these. Yeah, a really long time, but I think we can do these pretty quickly. So what is this one? This one we just finished computing. So what is that?
1/2.
Right, so we just finished computing that, and so that's 1/2, right? So that's 1/2, as above. Okay, so these are more interesting. So what about this next one? So I have the function here. It's 1 for the first 1/2, and then it's not drawn in quite good proportion, but it's 1 for the first 1/2, and then 0 for the second. So the width is 1/2 and the height is 1, right? So I'm just going to get the area of that box. Right, and so that's going to work. So that's going to be the answer. That one's going to be 1/2 also. Okay, something to notice about that function. Is that function in D0? Is that a derivative? It's not, right? So that's not a derivative, right? It didn't satisfy our derivative properties. So we've already found some functions we can integrate that were not derivatives. So we can do more functions than we could before. So this is f is not in D0. Okay, so that's something we've already observed. Integration is easier somehow than arriving as a derivative. All right, what about this function g, which is 1 only at a single point, only at the point 0. So it's this function. Exactly, right? Because I can take smaller and smaller boxes and the area is going to get smaller and smaller, right? So I can get from above and below. So this is equal to 0. The interesting thing about this one is that it's got an integral that's 0, but it's not 0. So integral of absolute value of g of x dx equals 0, but g is not 0. So this is not quite a Banach space. Okay, so we've already run into a problem with it being a Banach space. And that's something that that is some work, but one does eventually have to fix it. As I said, in the next class, one does find a way to fix that. But in any case, that's a problem. Okay. All right, and so what about this last one? if I have a function that's one, it's very hard to graph, of course, but this is a function that's a one for all the rationals and a zero for all the rest, right? So if I look in a single interval, what are the maximum and minimum values going to be always? Is that clear? Yeah, it's always going to have a minimum of zero, right? But there's always some rational number in there, so it's going to have a maximum of one, right? So the max, the sup is always going to be one. The int is always going to be zero, okay? So actually, this wasn't really the best question to ask. What about the upper and lower integrals? What are those going to be? Yeah, someone has got it correct, right? Yeah, someone else points to that, right? Exactly, yeah. So it's every single one of these intervals, however I break it up, is going to, when I look at the upper one, it's always going to be one. Okay, so I'm going to get the whole thing. And when I look at the lower one, it's always going to be zero. So I'm just going to get zero. So for every partition, in fact, I'm going to get one and zero for my estimates. And so the limits are going to be those. So this will be one and this will be zero. So this means that this only makes sense if those agree. So this does not exist. All right, and that's because those are different. All right, since those are different. So what does that mean? So that means that we have something that's not Riemann integrable. So we've found that at least not every bounded function works, right? So so there's some bounded functions that are going to give us trouble. So H is not in Riemann integrable. Okay, so that's kind of some basic examples to keep in mind. Not everything is Riemann integrable. This is a good example of something that's not. Not everything whose integral is zero is itself zero. This is a good example of something that has that property. And not everything that's integrable is necessarily a derivative. Here's something that's not. Okay, so those are basic concepts to keep in mind. And I'll do a few more proofs and some more examples next time. And I'll turn off the recording and stick around.